You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Monster House presents.
Monster Talk can be supported by listeners like you at patreon.com/monstertalk or by leaving positive reviews on iTunes and other podcasting sites. Learn more at monstertalk.org/support. Thanks to all of you who are supporting us in this way. We are humbled and grateful and hope that we always live up to or exceed your expectations.
The time continuum has been disrupted, creating this new temporal event sequence resulting in this alternate reality.
English, Doc.
My God. It's the future. My parents. My coworkers. My girlfriend. I'll never see any of them again. Yahoo!
His body is dying, but his mind is a pattern of electrical signals. We can upload his consciousness. We can save him.
Not like this.
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk.
Welcome to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
This episode's a little bit different from our normal format, and I hope you'll excuse the diversion. We're coming up on Thanksgiving here in the United States, a time when many people come together as families to engage in ritual gluttony and sloth. Maybe your family gets caught up in weird political or religious discussions. Well, this episode might be handy for giving you something more fun to talk about, or to argue about, or to discuss. You know, we're unashamedly cheerleaders for science here, but sometimes scientific findings undermine some of our most beloved tropes from fiction. And I've been keeping a list and slowly working on an article about this theme, but decided to run some of this by Karen, and then while we were discussing it, we thought, why not just share this with the entire class? So without further ado, I present Volume 1 of what might be an intermittently recurring theme, Fun Ruining.
Monster Talk.
Welcome back. This weekly schedule is hard, but we're doing it.
It is difficult, but I think it's worth it.
This topic for this week, I know I kind of sprung it on you, but I was working on this article because...
For where?
Well, I hadn't really figured out a destination. I was really sort of trying to pull it together. There's a whole bunch of ideas. You know, people accuse skeptics of being fun ruiners. And I got to thinking, it's like, well... I mean, if it's really important to you that things be true, like testable and true, I could see where that's true, that we could be seen as fun ruiners. But I know, like, we love monsters and we don't need them to be real to enjoy them.
Right. I think at the same time, a lot of skeptics enjoy fiction and science fiction and suspending disbelief, and they're possible, if they're capable of doing that.
Yeah. And so I got to thinking about other things in the world of fiction and fun where I used to really enjoy these concepts, but they've been rendered impossible by science. And it's a lot. It's a lot. But yeah.
You're going to give us a science lesson and rain on everyone's parade.
Yeah, I just thought it would be the feel-bad episode of the winter. Right? It's not quite winter yet, but yeah. Something for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, something to depress everyone with.
Exactly. No, I hope this will be a fun conversation. You know what I really hope? I hope that people might disagree with me or have other things.
Wouldn't be the first time.
No, it would not. But, maybe if they have their own ideas about things that science has kind of made less plausible, they can write in the comments or something. You know, I think it's a fun one. It's a fun idea to talk. This would be a perfect cocktail party, or if you had some kind of family gathering where people were going to talk about stuff like politics, or that you didn't want them to talk about,
like Thanksgiving.
Yes, if just hypothetically this kind of thing was popping up in your schedule this week, you might be able to say, instead of getting caught up in politics and other stuff, what if we talked about how science ruins fun? That's
I think that would go down just as well.
I think so too.
So to begin with then, what do we mean by science?
Oh, that's a very good point. I think it's important because people use the word science kind of in a generic
way.
Right? Yeah, different ways. I usually, especially in this context, I'm talking about the scientific method, which is a method of inquiry whereby one postulates they pose a hypothesis and then it's tested. And then you're trying to find out you're wrong. Like you want people to prove your idea wrong. And if they can't, that's a promising hint that maybe it's right. You know, everything science as a methodology promotes is always provisional because if new evidence comes along, it changes, which I think confuses people. But there's also science like the sciences, where we're talking about, you know, physics, biology, these sort of expertise modes of thoughts within academia, yeah, that kind of thing. And then people often conflate technology with science, and they'll say things like, well, if you don't believe in science, why do you use that cell phone, or why do you use computers, you know? But that, again,
yes,
technology is a product of science, but I don't think it's not the same thing. I guess that's my rough answer.
No, yeah, I think that's a pretty good starting point. And so you think that you've come up with some examples where science has ruined perfectly good fictional concepts?
Yeah, I really do. I really do.
You spend a lot of time thinking about these things.
I do spend a lot of time, a silly amount of time thinking about these things. Yeah. But I bet our listeners do too. So, yeah.
I think that they're right there with you, with us. You kind of mentioned to me over time some of these topics that you wanted to talk about. And I know you've mentioned the idea of the multiverse or a multiverse. Multiverses.
Yeah.
Different universes.
And you're going to hear about this all the time now because both the Marvel Cinematic Universe and to a large extent the DC Universe has this idea of multiple copies of Earth. And if you watch the Marvel Multiverse, everything is very Earth-centric and, you know, humanity is really important for reasons, and it's a fun idea. But then in physics, you have this concept of a multiverse and multiple dimensions. But I personally think it's probably helpful when you hear physicists talk about multiple dimensions to not think about them as length, height, and width. Those are dimensions, but to think about them in terms of properties. Like you need an extended set of properties to describe matter that extend beyond the length, width, height, breadth, time, and some of the other properties that we have when you're concerning matter. But when people think of multiverse in fiction, they're almost always thinking about another Earth. An Earth just like ours, except this one, I didn't have the blueberry jam. I had the strawberry jam this morning, you know.
Alternate realities? You could have like a world without shrimp, or with, you know, nothing but shrimp. Say you really like shrimp a lot, or we could say you don't like shrimp at all. Blah, I wish there weren't any shrimp, you'd say to yourself.
Stop.
We're all like his
Ponds or prawns.
So like Loki.
Yes, Loki. That whole TV series of Loki is all about that. Exactly.
Lots of different types of versions of him.
Oh, there's so many. The TV series Sliders was like this. There's a series of books that started with The Mists of Avalon by Zelazny that deals with the same idea. But here's the problem. This concept that there being multiple universes or multiple dimensions or multiverses, they may be real in physics. Like, it may be true that there's these other, like, there's the M-brain theory. There's lots of different theories about, like, how the universe might work. But think about how anthropocentric that is. Like, we want to make everything about people.
Oh, yeah, and very, very egotistical. Yeah. Exactly what we do. And it makes me think of the idea of doppelgangers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. But all these stories are about people experiencing this thing and the people being at the center of the story and people being in the center of the universe. But here's a funny thing about the universe. Think about and we'll talk about this a little more in some of these other topics, but if we replayed today, just ran back today and replayed it, chances are there'd be lots of little differences. Even if you basically made all the same decisions, it's almost impossible to repeat the same actions the same way twice, right?
Right. So you're talking about the butterfly effect.
Well, yes, exactly. If you take the butterfly effect, you get vastly divergent outcomes with small modifications to the initial conditions, right? So that's the way it's usually described. But we're thinking about within human history. Well, here's some sad news if you really love multiverses. If you replay the 4.5 billion years of Earth's history again, the chances of us ending up with intelligent life at all, it's very low. Let alone your life. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's just absurd that if you played everything the same, if you played everything the same from 100 years ago, it's just unlikely we'd end up with anything like what we have right now. Everything's too random.
I just think it's very ego-based and people think, things would work out better for me or that there's a better version of me somewhere or something like that. But I think it's still a fun idea to play around with.
It's a tremendously fun idea. But I want to take it one more step and say, forget about the idea there's multiple us or multiple Americas or multiple Europes or multiple whatever. The chances of the universe playing out again and reproducing Earth at all. I mean, current theories have it that the Earth was a much smaller planet that ran into something about the size of Mars that, so you get this massive explosion and the moon comes out of it. Well, that's a whole lot of cosmic billiards playing out that might never, ever happen again, ever, no matter how many times you replay the universe. You can get things like an Earth. That's pretty obvious. But to literally get the same planet again is basically impossible. And for over 4.5 billion years to play out, anyway, the point is, this is a preposterously human-centric view of how things work, and it's just the kind of silly nonsense that we love for fiction, but has no bearing on reality.
So where are some of these ideas coming from outside of fiction, movies?
I'm going to complain and say that a lot of physicists who want to explain multiple dimensions like to use these examples to make it accessible for people. Look, it'd be just like our planet, only now, nobody wears, flowers in their shirt or what, they'll say something ridiculous like, or the Hitler, won World War II.
I always hear the Hitler.
It's always something with Hitler, but
Hitler was never born.
If you play it over again, there's not going to be a Hitler, but there'll be something else, maybe not even people. I think it's tremendously unlikely we get humans at all, let alone we get the same people. It's just preposterous. So scientists love to make those easy to use analogies. They're very easy to be understood by the public, but poorly. It's a bad analogy. And
do you think it's a little bit like Einstein referring to God?
Well,
kind of metaphorical.
I've heard physicists pretty explicitly talk about this in terms that are very comic book, and I think that's a mistake. We do know that Einstein talked about the God in the terms of Spinoza, like that. Basically, he's talking about the rules of the universe, not an entity that loves and cares about us. You know, so
sure, that's not how everyone would interpret that.
No, they would not. No, they would not. So, and and if they're right, maybe they'll get to ask him later.
Indeed, yeah. It just makes me think of the time that a person I know, I won't mention that person's name, they happened to be an astrophysicist, and we were watching Star Wars at a friend's house, and this person spent the entire movie whining, or as I would say, whinging about physics and saying, oh, that couldn't happen, pish-tosh, and complaining throughout and kind of spoiling the whole movie for everyone.
Does that make you an ex-whinge fighter?
So, yeah, I think there's a kind of fine line with all of this, too, that, you know, I don't think we always need to be skeptical about these things when we clearly know it's fiction.
No, and I love this stuff. I love multiverse stuff. I mean, I'm a fan of many of these things. I just, again, fun ruiners. As much as I like them, it's sad to realize that this can't really happen, you know?
Well, yeah, I think it's, you know, a lot of people know that these things aren't necessarily true or not really this way, but at the same time they don't know how to explain them. I mean, they're highfalutin concepts.
They are. I think exactly.
Well, I think we should move on.
Absolutely.
What about brain swapping? So consciousness moving to another body, that seems to play out in a lot of kind of cheesy Switched movies.
Yes. Yes. I think I first ran into this in maybe Freaky Friday, which I didn't get to see in theaters because my fundamentalist parents didn't want us to watch it because it looked like magic. You know how they are.
Which version? Weren't there two? I think there was.
There's multiple versions. I think
one
there's
in the semis and there's one a, in the early 2000s.
And another new one that just, I think it's just called Freaky with Vince Vaughn. It's like a serial killer.
Oh, really?
It gets swapped. Yeah, yeah,
oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like a horror comedy kind of a take on the thing. And it happened in Gilligan's Island. There was an episode where they swapped everybody's brains around.
I don't think I've seen that one. Oh.
Oh, dear. How could I go anywhere dressed like this?
See the way you look.
Will you all please stop bickering?
Will you please keep out of this, Professor?
I am Marianne.
I keep forgetting he's a she.
What are we going to do, Professor?
Who did Gilligan become?
Oh, I don't remember. It was like a really random switcheroo. Like everybody was everybody else. And then it showed up in Lovecraft's The Thing on the Doorstep. That's a really cool one.
Classic.
Very creepy.
What's your beef with brain swapping then?
Well, so most of these stories, the brain swapping happens by consciousness leaving one body and going into another through what I guess we'd have to assume is magical means. And I think what's happened over time is neurology and brain science has generally shown that whatever our identities and personalities are, they seem to be firmly tied up within the hardware of the brain. So our brain's biological structures produce our personalities, our memories, you know, our passions, all these things. Everything that makes us us is in this meat in our head. And I think the idea that your consciousness could leave that, it's a dualism idea. And unfortunately, and I don't say that lightly. I am deeply saddened that I can't get all the things I've learned to leave my body and go into another body. I think that would be really handy.
You know, this makes me think of an episode or a movie that we covered for Based on a True Story, Child's Play. With the murderer.
Yeah, exactly. The killer.
How he enters the doll and then wants to enter the child. And I guess that was voodoo. That was that was real.
Horror movie voodoo. Exactly. Yeah.
So is this really science fiction, this idea, or is it just a kind of device to create a wacky situation?
It's a fun idea for fiction, but there have been real sort of experiments pushing towards this. I guess the most famous one is like this idea of, let's say you're a scientist and you know that you really need to like literally move the brain from one body to another. Currently, our technology doesn't allow us to do that. Even if you could keep the brain alive, which is plausible, you can't currently reconnect the spinal column. And as a consequence, if you could like take a brain out of a body and put it into another body, you'd be stuck with the problem of now that brain won't be able to drive any of the mechanics in that body because the nerve connections are not there. So a head transplant is probably the closest that we could come to. There's some pretty unsavory and questionable Russian dog experiments that people probably are aware of if they've ever looked into this at all. Not safe for work, not safe for dreaming if you don't like nightmares, but I think it's been oversold on the internet for how effective it was, but I think there's reason to believe that there was some form of dog experiment done in Soviet Russia, and that for a little bit, a dog's head was kept alive off of its body.
Those poor dogs are always tested on.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I've been reading about vivisection lately, and it's like, it's horrible.
The other book I was writing about infertility, just reading about dogs have been tested on for vasectomies and laparoscopies and just about every kind of fertility surgery you can think of.
Space travel, all kinds of things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So animal testing, I think there's places where it's necessary, but it's a dark history as well.
It really is, and probably a subject for another show. Otherwise, we could go down a rabbit hole with this one.
Exactly. All right.
Hello, I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
Each week on Chinwag, we dig into the weird topics you wonder about, that you care about, the stuff none of us are totally sure of, like the Bermuda Triangle, Mothman, consciousness, philosophy, UFOs, ghosts, or say Bigfoot.
So who's to say that there's not alien species that are Sasquatch?
Like I've seen a ghost, and I would hear something walking and breathing.
Maybe every path is right. I will accept as a premise that every path is right.
That is a face on Mars. Eyes, nose, it kind of looked like Wilson the volleyball.
Some people enjoy the waves or whatever crashing, and I enjoy listening to a quantum physics audiobook.
I do think there are many things in the world that we just don't understand and probably won't understand.
That's our whole show.
So join us every Wednesday on all major podcast platforms and find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at ChinwagPod and Wagon.
Hey, y'all. Spooky season is here. And if you're looking for a show to whet your appetite for a little haunted history, then I'd like to invite you to check out Southern Gothic, a chart-topping history podcast that explores some of the most infamous legends, folklore, ghost stories, and hauntings of the American South. We've covered all sorts of stuff from the Bell Witch of Tennessee to the disappearance of the Confederate submarine, the H.L. Hunley. Not to mention our deep dives into the local lore of some of America's oldest and most haunted cities, like New Orleans, Charleston, and St. Augustine. So, if you're ready for a little good old-fashioned Halloween storytelling with a commitment to quality historical research, then be sure to check out Southern Gothic today. It's available now on all your favorite podcast apps.
Well, just finally, though, you've got me thinking about the singularity, the idea of that, and the idea of the brain uploading. Have you got any kind of comments on that?
My opinion is, an informed opinion, is that since we don't even know what human consciousness is, like there's no singular definition for it, that the probability of taking the thing that we think of as human consciousness and recreating it in a computer is extremely low, like negligible. And I think that comes from what we think of as consciousness, that's a simple word, but it really represents a lot of very different neurological functions going on at the same time.
Absolutely.
There's like, for example, like if you wanted to be me, or like who would, I could barely want to be me myself, but if you wanted to be me and like be honest about being me, part of the thing that makes me is that I'm really curious. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, computers aren't. Okay. I love coffee. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my day is spent about when I get my next cup of coffee. Computers don't care about that. I mean, like these basic motivations and drivers. The pun subroutine. I mean, think of the efficiency. But still, would it be me if the computer didn't come up with puns all day? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. So
no, interesting questions to ponder.
Yeah, since we don't even know what consciousness is, the idea of capturing a human brain in a computer program and reproducing it is ridiculous. It's just comical.
Oh yeah, easy to talk about, not to do.
But keep taking those vitamins, Kurzweil.
Yeah, he's an interesting character. Again, I think another show we could tackle that one. So yeah. I think we should move on because Absolutely. We've got a few more topics that we want to talk about. What about cryonics? That's a popular one in sci-fi.
It is.
Well, especially in the past, kind of 1970s.
Yeah, and I mean, it seems to be one of those perennial, like I guess the people that run the companies that actually do this kind of thing, like Alcor, they are always looking for opportunities to get in the news. And I just saw something the other day about this. But yeah, it like the classic example is the Planet of the Apes movie with Charlton Heston, where at the beginning, right. they're going to go on a long space trip. So everybody gets into their cryo tubes and goes to sleep. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, because we don't have faster than light travel, the idea of going to sleep and then waking up when you get to your destination is a brilliant way to bypass all the ravages of age and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And of course, they're still alive.
Right.
Takes place, well, as opposed to, I guess, the modern science nowadays with people dying and then basically being frozen.
Yeah, it's complicated. So the way the legal system works right now, you have to be dead before they can freeze you. And mm-hmm. really, unless they're standing by while you're dying, then you're going to have hypoxia where your brain's not going to have adequate oxygen. And the damage that that does yes. within a minute or so is enough to mm-hmm. remove your ability to speak, for example. I mean, it's mm-hmm. really rapid how fast your brain deteriorates, which, by the way, further supports the idea that our brains are the actual structure that holds our personalities, I think.
Yeah, I still think it's interesting in the way that it has been applied, for example, with frozen embryos.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
how they are frozen and then basically thawed and or placed into the uterus and then begin cell mitosis. I think it's still something that's possible, but maybe not necessarily in the way that it's portrayed in movies.
Well, right, because right now, as an adult or even as a child, if you're frozen, they don't have any mechanism to resuscitate you. And so there
unless you're Captain America,
right. So they know, like they've improved the ability to put in anti-freeze agents so that you're. So let's back up just
like
a second.
Car.
Right, what normally happens is when you freeze something that has water in it, which we have water in all our cells, the yes. water crystalline structure when it freezes actually expands. Typically, you think of cold contracts, heat expands, but with water when it freezes. It expands and it ruptures cells. And if those cells are in critical places in your body, like your brain, they're dead. They're not coming back. So as a consequence of that, the freezing process would normally render you into a big pile of, you know, mush, right? So that's the problem. And so right now, we presently, even like you can do things at the cellular level that you can't do at the macro level. And so currently, if you freeze somebody, it's a lovely story, but bring them mm-hmm. back and I'll change my tune. And you can't because it won't work because their brain's dead. That's the problem.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, well.
Save your money.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a good point. I mean, it is frighteningly expensive to be a guinea pig for that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it looks so cool. It seems like
it does.
Literally, I guess, but it's just not
kind of romanticized.
There are some seriously disturbing horror stories. There's a famous episode mm-hmm. of This American Life that did a segment on the beginning of this process. And wow, it's bad. It's really bad.
I have to check that out.
Yeah.
Just not before bed.
No. I'll put a link in the show notes. It's worth listening to, but you'll never think about cryonics the same again. So.
Oh, okay. Well, sounds interesting. But I think we should move on. We've got a few more topics still. So what about aliens? in our solar system. This is a favorite topic for Monster Talk, aliens.
It is. I grew up reading Golden Age science fiction, Amazing Stories, Astounding. All the little anthologies, FNSF, Asimov, go on and on and on. Mm. I love sci-fi. But also, I love weird stuff, as we've discussed. And if you look at the history of our ufology, which largely pops up in the 1940s and then continues till today, to right up till today, the original ideas for what was behind these UFOs was that it was aliens from local stuff in our solar system. So there would be people would meet Venusians, and people would meet Martians, and people would meet moon people. And they look like us, and they were great, and they spoke English.
And their languages are like us.
And they were basically just a bunch of space theosophists. That's but this idea that, like, you know, that our solar system was just full of life and technology, and that we were going to be part of at least a solar system sort of political structure, just really hasn't panned out. None of the planets we've explored seem to be habitable. I mean, people still hold out. I mean, when people are looking for life, like when NASA's looking for life right now, they are not looking for gray aliens or Zeta Reticulans or anything like that. They're looking for molecular, like, you know, microorganisms, maybe a virus, maybe a bacteria. It's some kind of basic biochemistry signature in the solar system. And the sheer difficulty of crossing the vastness of space, from another solar system to ours, has largely rendered that idea of aliens coming from another solar system to be unlikely. And I know that that'll be disappointing to people who really want it to be true. But if you actually look at the field of ufology, what seems to be happening to a large degree is people have gotten away from the idea that these are local, except with that it might be that they're not from another planet at all. Maybe they're from inside the Earth. Maybe they're from another dimension. But these are kind of like special pleadings to work around the problem of there's no sign of life in our solar system, and it's way the hell too far to get to the next neighborhood.
What about the idea of terraforming other planets like Mars?
It makes me sad because, like, Elon Musk famously talked about nuking the poles of Mars to see if we could change. And it's like, well, hey, how about we just see if we can kind of keep it from getting too hot here, you know? I'm all for exploring other planets. I mean, I'm deeply into that idea. But when you talk about terraforming an entire other planet, that is presently a nonsense idea. That's presently just nonsense.
How do you explain Las Vegas?
Well, Las Vegas won't make it forever unless they come up with some new water source. Because was it Lake Mead? Yeah. Is really getting low. I mean, they're finding all the bodies now.
Oh, boy. I don't know how much time we've got left, but I think we should at least touch upon time travel, human time travel.
Yeah.
To the past.
Yeah. I mean, again, freezing aside, we know that you can travel forward into the future, or you can at least make time travel slower for yourself by going really, really fast. They've done some funny twin studies where, you know, sending people up in spacecraft and one twin staying on the ground, and you can see, you know, a measurable difference.
Amazing, amazing.
Yeah. So Einstein's relativity works, but if you wanted to go forward, like if you could somehow go fast enough that, you know, time wouldn't affect you as quickly, right? Well, that's interesting. I mean, that seems semi-plausible, right? But going backwards, I don't think so. And here's why, because
that's what everyone wants, though.
Well, it is, because people want to go kill Hitler. There's probably a big queue. Yeah, There's a big line of people standing there with ready to kill Hitler. It's just like the big time traveler queue. Learning about the biology of how people are born, right? So when you find out that, like, you know, your mom typically would have one egg loose, released for pregnancy, you know, maybe two if you're going to have some exciting twin action or whatever, but maybe one will split and you'll get, you know, identical twins.
Yes.
But on the male side, the male's going to release millions of sperm. Only one can be the winner. Okay.
Yes. Yep.
If you replay that love night when your father goes to meet your mom and then he stops to scratch for a second that he didn't do the last time, suddenly a different sperm makes it and an entirely different person comes out. And I can tell you right now, as a parent with three different kids, two of whom are twins, they're not the same people. Like, I mean, like everybody's different. No matter how much we try the same parenting and everything else, they come out with entirely different personalities. They're all different.
Oh, yeah. I think of that all the time because I went through IVF and just how things would be different if it was any other month.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just wildly unlikely. Okay. First of all.
Or any other day. So, yeah.
You're just, the chances of you being you are astonishing. Like, I mean, it's like you may go your whole life and never win the lottery. By being alive, you've won the best lottery because in the worst human condition, like if you're having the most miserable life possible, I think you're still having a better time than the ones who didn't make it.
Indeed.
You have a chance at agency in a dark and uncaring universe. And that's amazing. That is truly astounding.
It really is incredible. And we got some other topics. I don't know if you want to go into them or not, if you want to just talk in more general terms.
Sure, the point of all that biological rambling was that if you change anything when you go to the past, you're not going to exist. So, like, it's just...
And people, don't know that or don't think of
like,
that.
I mean, like, I'm not talking about... Like, Marty McFly, he can't go back and... he made his mom and dad meet after all. Everything's going to be okay. Marry no, it's not. Mom, yeah. It is not going to be okay because there would be no Marty McFly as soon as he got involved. The minute he got involved, there's no longer a Marty McFly because that trajectory is ruined. So, yeah.
So, in terms of Back to the Future and... books and other movies, does it even matter? You know, if we're just suspending our disbelief, isn't that the name of the game with escapism?
No, have fun. Have fun. But I think sometimes people get really caught up with these ideas. The singularity stuff and the terraforming stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who really want things to collapse so they can rebuild it in their own image. You know,
That's a bit cultish.
Yeah. And the reality is, innovation and social structures, these are all slowly developing accretive processes and they can be destroyed and changed. But starting from ground zero is basically impossible because there's so many domains of expertise that are necessary. I mean, if you imagine, like, people have these fantasies about, like, you know, some disease comes out and kills almost everybody, but the ones that are left are going to put things back together. No, they're not. Like, it's going to take hundreds of years to recover because if the person who was responsible for making plastics, the person who was responsible for making medications, like, all those people working in really complicated systems with all these inputs and outputs that are all require tons of expertise, which just can't be picked up by picking up a book and reading it. It's not that easy. So we live in a really complicated present, and it's fragile.
Oh, yeah. And I think when people think of these things, they think of the best outcome more.
Yeah.
They oversimplify things.
Yeah.
But with everything that you've been talking about, there are certainly a lot of can'ts with science. Do you think that to some extent that with some of these areas, it's more a case of not yet, that these things might still happen?
We can eliminate the multiverse, okay, as being anthropocentric.
You sure?
Yeah, 100% sure. I believe I don't think there's any technical reason why it would be impossible to move a brain from one body to the other, except that we have not discovered how to make the cells regenerate to make the spinal column work. And that is, I'm assuming, hundreds and hundreds of years away, if anybody wanted to bother with it. I mean...
Well, so that mother and daughter can unite and understand each other's plights.
Sure. I thought that was what Thanksgiving was for.
It all comes full circle. But yeah, I think it's really fun to think about these things too, and the possibilities for the future. And but also, it's important to learn the science. I mean, if you care about these kinds of things,
Some of these are, I think, some of these are dangerous ideas, like the simulation hypothesis. A lot of people in IT are really excited because they've made a simulation and they know what simulations look like. And you can simulate things in life. So maybe life itself is a simulation. And it's a fun, childish idea. It's a fun thing to contemplate. And you can imagine waking up and you're not dead. The video game's just over. You go put your tokens in and play another round of Human Life or whatever. Okay, well, that's, again, fun. But the reality is if you ever try to simulate a system, you know, it's way more computationally complicated the more variables you put into it. In reality, like the real world that we live in, which is not a simulation, there's a vast amount of computational requirements just to simulate like an acre of land. I mean, all of the insects, all of the molecules, all of the atoms interacting, you know, all of the energy going into the system and out of the system, the gases, everything about it would have to be like, it's just too much computational debt to make that scale to the solar system, as you know, or to the galaxy, or to the universe, as lots of people like to think. It's just ridiculous. Like so.
You're making my head hurt, and it's above and beyond what I think most people think about when they contemplate these ideas.
They like it to be fun, and you pull off the game helmet. Oh, that was awesome.
Just simple. Yeah, keep it simple.
So that's my rant about science and fun ruining.
That was really fun to talk about, and I think that our listeners are going to have a lot of thoughts about this, and certainly it'd be great to hear from people. What do you think about what we've discussed?
Did I get it wrong? Let me know. You know, it's and Chris, I mean, a lot of you still think I got it wrong about Bigfoot, so you know. Well, thanks for coming and talking with me about this. It's been on my mind for
I'm glad you got that off your chest.
Yeah.
It's certainly something that you've mentioned here and there. So it was fun to put this together and look at some of those. I mean, there's still a lot more to talk about. Maybe
there
another show.
If listeners have some things they want to talk about, like they disagree with, you know, send it in. Let us know. We'd be interested in hearing about it and talking about it. Groovy. All right. Well, we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Blake. Yeah, we'll.
For all of our American listeners, if this is something you celebrate, we'll say happy Thanksgiving to you from me.
And from me, and happy holidays in general.
And we'll be here for them. So stand by.
We'll be back soon.
Monster Talk.
You've been listening to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
You've been listening to a discussion of science as a fun ruiner. I put some links in the show notes, but maybe you vigorously disagree with my assessments. Did I tip any sacred cows? Do tell. Let us know. Come on over to our Facebook page or Patreon and let us know your thoughts. And if you have trouble tracking us down, you can go to monstertalk.org and there's a contact link at the top of the page. Monster Talk's a proud member of the Airwave Media Podcast Network, home of such shows as Investing for Beginners, My History Can Beat Up Your Politics, and Food with Mark Bittman. If you'd like to advertise on this show, contact sales at advertisecast.com. Monster Talk theme music is by Peach Stealing Monkeys. Happy Thanksgiving from me and Karen, where applicable. May all your family arguments this holiday be super nerdy.
Been a Monster House presentation.